Tim joins us now, scouting for Central Scouting. Tim, how are you, my man?
Very good. How are you? How are things?
Things are excellent. Of course, now I guess maybe not the busy time anymore, but you work for Central Scouting, do a lot of the Ontario region, and you kind of as you lean into the draft, for somebody who rates all the players, do you then look to see where you had guys rated and then see how the NHL teams, where they ultimately take them? And do you compare every year and see, okay, did I see something wrong? Did they see something wrong? How does it work for a scout? Like, how do you gauge what you're seeing?
Yeah, well, I work for the Ontario Hockey League, so I'm scouting for the kids that are going into the OHL. But it's always fun for me to watch the NHL draft too. Because when I'm seeing the top end kids, you know, playing like a John, I saw John Tavares when he was, he would have been 15 years old. I was watching Connor McDavid when he was 13 years old, and you always kind of look at him and say, okay, like, you know, how is he going to do, you know, 3 years from now or 4 years from now in McDavid's thing, McDavid's situation, are they going to do in the National Hockey League and where they're going to take them? So it's interesting and. Some of the kids that I saw that I thought would have gone higher and would have done better in the draft didn't go, but have turned out well. And I think one of the main kids is Robbie Fabbri that playing for St. Louis, and I just can't believe how much he's playing in the playoffs. And he went kind of middle of the OHL draft, and I thought he was, you know, when I saw him play, he was such a winner. He played against Connor McDavid, and they had such a powerhouse. And McDavid's team just couldn't beat his Robbie Fabry's team strictly because of Robbie Fabbri. And then he went to Kitchener and he played fantastic. And then, you know, I thought he was going to be a fairly high pick in the NHL. And then, you know, he slipped a little bit. I think mainly because of size. I mean, he's 5'10", you know, 5'9", 5'10". So watching that and seeing that's always kind of fun and kind of engaging where you thought the kids would go and how much they developed over the course of the years since I scouted them.
Well, it is very, and it's so difficult at every level because you're really going off projections, right? You look at skill set and competitiveness, and if some guys don't grow, it does make it harder. Although the lack of size is still an issue in some people's eyes, but probably not nearly as much as it was 10 years ago.
No. I mean, and I think the classic example for us is the Leafs pick, Mitch Marner. And when he was minor midget, when I was watching him, he was like 5'7". They said he was 5'9", but I mean, I think that's the skates on. He was 5'9". But he could tell he had a knack to score, and his IQ was better. He was the smartest guy in the draft. And he went 21st in the NHL draft in the OHL draft. London picked him up. And, you know, and I talked to some OHL teams, and I knew for a fact that they said, oh, you know, we really like him, but we think he's too small. And, you know, look at him now. I don't know if you know, but, like, his line that he played with Keith Tkachuk's son and Marner, and I forget the other kid, they scored over 50 goals in 16 games in the playoffs this year in the OHL. So, yeah, I mean, you know, it used to be when I started about 10 years ago, it was size over skill at some point, but now it's completely opposite. It's you got to have skill over size for sure.
Do you feel there's more skill in the game, but at times as they go higher up, it's coached out of the game, that it still doesn't allow some players to really show their skill set?
Yeah, I do, you know, and I even think it happens with the kids that I'm watching at 15, that at the beginning of the year, for example, there was a defenseman who really loved to rush with the puck, and he was a super smooth skater, and he would go and he would take the puck deep and, you know, he'd make some plays, but, you know, he was 15 and he made some mistakes and he got caught, and you could tell by halfway through the season that the coach told him, don't rush with the puck. And you look and you go, you know, that, you know, the NHL and the people want guys to carry the puck and have that offensive threat and be able to go from defense to offense. And I do think it is. I think even at the age that I'm watching, that the coaches are trying to get systems in, and the systems at times are squashing the kids, you know, creativeness and handling the puck. And the kids that do handle the puck, they're and are creative. They're a little bit of, you could tell they're a handful to deal with. They're not the kids that are just going to do always what the coach tells. You can tell that you know, they're going to butt heads with the coach because they want to do what they want to do and show off their skill.
Tim Cherry joins us. We are talking scouting, also talking about the Kidney Foundation of Canada, our charity item today. And Tim, you know this firsthand. You were sick at a young age at 12, and then at 13, you required a kidney transplant. And I know your dad, Don, of course, and your mom and you, everybody went in to get tested. And it turns out Cindy was kind of like a twin as far as having everything go over. Can you kind of walk us through the transplant? How long were you kind of out for as far as out of commission? And what's been the after effects this many years later?
Well, you know, when I got sick, when I was, as they say, when I was 12, and then when I turned 13, you know, I had to go on dialysis, and I went on dialysis for about 9 months, and which is, you know, I was lucky because it wasn't really that long a time. You know, there were some poor people there, and this was when we were, Dad was coaching the Bruins. We were living in Boston at the time. And so, you know, finally when they thought, okay, the virus that I had that wrecked my kidneys, which was actually I got from an infection from getting my tonsils taken out, which ended up ruining my kidneys. Once that was out of my system, it went pretty quick. They tested Cindy and they said Cindy was the perfect match. I think like we were almost biological twins. So there was like a 97-98% match. And probably within 2 weeks, we did the transplant and we got out pretty quick. We were pretty fast. I was probably in the hospital for 2 weeks, but usually it's a little bit longer than that. And frankly, at the time, Cindy had a rougher time than I did, because at the time when they did the, you know, this was back in the 70s, and it was still kind of not as common a procedure as is today. They had to take out some ribs and stuff like that. So she took a while to get going. So she was in the hospital about the same time, about 2 weeks. But, you know, nowadays they do, you know, I was watching a documentary on transplants, and they're just small incisions now to take the kidney out. Like they don't take a rib out or anything like that. And it's amazing the technology over the past 30 or 40 years. And and the long-term effects, nothing with Cindy. I mean, she's healthy. She had a healthy boy about 10 years later. And, you know, for me, I just have to watch, you know, I just have to watch what he eats. And, you know, I've got to watch my blood levels. And I go to the kidney doctor about every 3 or 4 months, and they just check all my blood work and stuff like that to make sure everything's working. I mean, you just have to be conscious of, you know, kind of try to live as healthy of a lifestyle as you can.
Are there certain foods then that cause a problem for you? What do you have to avoid?
Well, they just, you know, they want a lower salt diet. You know, salt is difficult on your kidneys. You know, there's certain things like they don't want me taking anti-inflammatory. So if I have a headache or I got a knee bothering me, they don't want me taking like any of the over-the-counter anti-inflammatories. They're very tough on your kidneys. So you just kind of avoid those things. And again, they just, you know, I have to kind of watch my weight. And they just said, you know, you have to keep an eye. In many ways, I'm lucky because my match was so close that I have a little bit more leeway than some of the people who are on some more restrictive drugs that, you know, you can't eat and certain things. But, you know, it's compared to what it's like on dialysis and compared to after the transplant, I mean, dialysis is a very difficult procedure to go through. When I was on there, I couldn't really drink anything. I could only drink about 7 to 10 ounces of water a day. I could only eat some you know, noodles just to keep my digestive system going. So when you look back at that and just the minimal restrictions that I have, they're really nothing that I have to worry about.
Tim Cherry joins us, hockey scout, son of Don Cherry, who has graciously agreed he's auctioning off one of his suits today. It's framed, the suit, the shirt, and the tie, all for the Kinney Foundation of Canada. And we got a big Mayfield dinner for four, which is outstanding. So, Tim, you were 12. You mentioned dialysis. I didn't know you could only drink that little amount of water. Man, I might feel like you're dehydrated all day. That would be brutal. So,
Yeah. Well, I mean, your kidneys weren't working, right?
Yeah.
My kidneys were completely shut down. So they didn't, you know, I wasn't really even passing any water. So I had to keep that down. And then when I was on dialysis, they would put all the, they would give me kind of all the nutrients and saline that I needed, because it would go in and out. And, you know, I spent probably on a shorter day, 4 hours on dialysis, on a longer day, sometimes 6 hours on dialysis.
6 hours a day. Now, you mentioned your sister, Cindy, because she was the one who donated her kidney to you,
yeah,
which was great. And she ended up just living like a normal life now for her. She's a mother herself.
Yeah.
She's very active. I know she does a ton of charitable work. And I asked that question because there might be some people out there that are contemplating doing it. And she got it done a long time ago when, yeah, as you mentioned, they had to break a rib and stuff, which is nowadays it's a lot easier. So for her, for anybody out there who's contemplating it, the going through the not that it's easy, there's always a risk, of course, but it's not something that has in a lot of cases, any long-term effects.
No, not really. I mean, as you say, Cindy, you know, that she went, as they say, the technology now that they have and the procedures, I mean, how much far they are advancing, is again, in 14, in 30 some years, is amazing. And no, Cindy doesn't, you know, she, again, you know, you have two kidneys, right? And they say basically you use, most of the time you use one kidney anyway. And, you know, the other kidney is kind of a backup system for, if anything ever goes wrong. But, you know, she's the same thing. I mean, she just kind of watches her diet and makes sure she doesn't eat too much salt and, you know, stuff that you should be doing anyway, right? So, you know, it's a, you know, they say it's the gift of life, and it really is. I mean, you're living on dialysis, and the technology and the advances in dialysis now, they might be a little bit easier than when I was on it, but still, though, it's you're basically tied to a machine, if not every day, every other day. And, you know, you really can't travel. And, you know, it's everything that you know, like if you like to go to a movie and have popcorn or sit down and watch a hockey game and have something to eat while you're doing that, you just can't do it. And your quality of life certainly goes down quite a bit. And when you do get that kidney, it's just amazing how much your life improves and how much better you feel. It's just like a gray cloud like lifts from you and the sun finally hits you after however many years you're on dialysis.
Tim, that excellent a graphic description of just how it feels, I think, for people, because a lot of us, honestly, I've kind of been ignorant, I guess, a little bit to how much pain and frustration there is that goes on when you're on dialysis. I did not know it was that extreme. So I'm very happy to hear that you're lucky enough and your sister Cindy and yourself are both healthy and happy this many years later. That's great. The Kidney Foundation does a ton of great work, I know, for helping people out. And anybody out there who wants to get on the donor list definitely can. And if they want to help out another way, they can bid on our auction item today. So, Tim, I really appreciate you joining us. Enjoy scouting and enjoy the draft.
Okay, thanks very much.